Okay, we're going to hear Masechet Tamid on Chaf Hei Amud Bet. The Masechto is basically a description of the bringing of the Korban Tamid every day in the Mikdash. It begins with the whole process or the daily routine in the Mikdash, Tamid Shel Shachar being the earliest Korban that was brought in the Mikdash. And so it starts a little bit further back from that, giving us a description of the work or the Shmirah that's done in the Mikdash. Moving on to the first Avoda in the Mikdash, which we know from the Gemara in Yoma is Trumat HaDeshen. And then finally, moving into the Korban Tamid itself. As opposed to the other two Masechta that we do, Kinim and Midot, Masechta Tamid actually has some Gemara that's associated with it, not just Mishnayot in the Bavli. Shlosha Mikomot Kohanim Shomrim B'Meit HaMikdash. There are three places in which the Kohanim are Shomer the Mikdash. Now the Gemara is going to learn that there are actually 24 Shmirot in the Mikdash. 21 of those were done by Levi'im, and 3 of them were done by Kohanim. And most of the Rishonim believe that there's a mitzvah to say to have shmirah by the Mikdash, to have shmiratem et mishmeret ha-kodesh, and therefore there's a mitzvah to say to watch the Mikdash, guard the Mikdash. Now in terms of guarding or watching the Mikdash, this is not to guard against an enemy, to guard against thieves, in that sense of shmirah, but shmirah in the sense of kavod. Kavod like the Armon HaMelech, like the king's palace, where there are people who are in service at all times. And therefore, the Shmirah here is not one with weapons, it's not one where there are any particular needs except to give kavod to the Mikdash itself. What's interesting here is the Mifaresh says, well, we needed to know this, but Gemara Nafkalan Mikra, Gemara learns this out of a pasuk, says Shmirah, the Beit Mikdash Tirich Shimor, Dilo Nafkalan Mikra, have we not had it from a pasuk? Hava Amina Lo Tzrichi Shomrim. I would have thought the Mikdash does not require any guards. De'ein aniyut become ashirut. The principle that's mentioned by the Gemara in a number of places that you don't act in an impoverished manner in a place that's supposed to denote royalty, extravagance, the place of Hashem. It's a strange utilization of the term because he says, Ve'i ganvu klei Mikdash. Had they stolen something from the Mikdash, kanu acherim, just buy another one. That's what he says. You wouldn't have to guard it for theft because someone stole it. It's a place we don't care. We don't care about any monetary expenditures, and therefore we'll just buy a new one. I would also have thought that there was sufficient with one shomer, not that you required 24 shomrim. Anyway, it's a strange usage of the term because we know in many places that the Gemara mentions the fact that we are Torah Chasa Mamonum Shisrael. Torah doesn't willy-nilly spend the money of Klal Yisrael. And over here, the Trumat HaLishka, the monies that we used to pay for the Klei HaMikdash, we came from Klal Yisrael. So why would we just say, oh yeah, sure, if it got stolen, we'd just replace it. Right, so that's another factor, which is also interesting, is that we know from the Mishnayot that things of Kodesh were held in very high esteem, even Ganavim. And Listim, if it was Kodesh, would not touch it, would not get involved with it. So we know that most people would not even come close to touching Kodesh, and that maybe for it didn't probably require Shmirah, because people had a certain amount of fear, reverence for the Mikdash, and they didn't steal from it. Nevertheless, all the Rishonim say that there is Shmirah in the Mikdash, mitzvah to say, to watch the Mikdash for the Kavod of the Mikdash. The duration of that Shmirah, according to most of the Mifarshim, it's Yom V'Laylo, in that it's a continuous Shmirah, not just at night time. Consider in the Mefaresh, he says, "Chol shemrei yer ben bayom ben balayla lo yushinim." But they didn't sleep day or night, indicating that he thought that the Shemira here was both day and night. Whereas the Rambam, when he codifies it, the Halacha only brings down that there was Shemira at night. So the Shloshim Mekomot that the Kohanim Shomrim, the Beit HaMikdash is Beit Aptinus. Beit Aptinus is familiar to us from the Gemara in Yoma, because the Beit Aptinus was the place where they prepared the Ketoret. The place where the Kohen Gadol went before Yom HaKippurim to learn the Maaseh HaKtoret for Yom HaKippurim. Tinus was a family that had the Mesorah as to how to make the Ketoret. There the Mishnah discusses certain families praised by the Chachamim, others that were denigrated by the Chachamim. Generally most believe that Beit Aptinus was on the positive side, even though they would not share the secret of the Ketoret with any other family, and they had a monopoly on the secret, but they did it L'Shem Shemayim because they didn't want it to get into the wrong hands. They didn't want it to become a bizayon in any way. And therefore, the Chachamim praised them. Beit Avtinus, again, the Gemara in Yoma says that they weren't sure whether it was on the southern side of the Azara or the northern side of the Azara. The Gemara there confuses it with the Lishkat HaPalhedrin. Lishkat HaPalhedrin was the place where the Kohen HaGadol stayed on the 7 days prior to Yom HaKippurim. So there the Gemara says that they don't know whether Beit Avtinus is in the south, Lishkat HaPalhedrin in the north, whether it was in the southern side or the northern side. Between those two, they say whichever one was in the north, the other one was in the south.
According to the Yerushalmi, the Beit Avtinus was found on the southern side of the Azara, above the Shar HaMayim.
Then there's the Beit HaNitzotz. The Mefaresh over here says, with regards to the Beit HaNitzotz, Lo Shemati Botan Lamani Krakein. No idea why it was called the Chamber of the Spark. He doesn't have a reason or a definition for why it's called Beit HaNitzotz. And again, the identity or the location of Beit HaNitzotz, the Rosh over here, he says the Beit HaNitzotz was Minach Sadraita Ptucha Miruach Echad. It was some sort of portico that was open on one side. And the rays of the sun used to break forth through there. It was a lot of light. It's called Beit HaNitzotz, not because it was the spark, or the place of the spark, but rather because of the sunshine that came in there, and the rays of sun that came in there, and therefore it was called Beit HaNitzotz, maybe. And there was a location from where they saw the sun rise, that they knew that it was the Zvichat HaChama. That's at least the Rosh's explanation of what it was.
The Ravid quotes the Oruch, who says that the reason it was called the Beit HaNitzotz was because that was the source of the fire for the Mizbeach.
We will see that it was an Aliyah, it was an upper chamber.
And in Masechet Midot, it tells us it was over the Shar HaNitzotz, which was on the northern side of the Azara.
And Beit HaMoked, now Beit HaMoked is familiar to us from a number of places. Again, it's familiar to us from the Mishnayot in Yoma as well as the Mishnayot in Shabbat. Mishnah in Shabbat says that when it comes to the Medina, you're not allowed to have a fire that is kindled on Erev Shabbat until the fire takes hold of Rov. Because once it takes hold of Rov, we're not worried about you stoking the fire in order to ensure that it continues. If you have a pyre of wood there, Rov of the wood must be on fire before Shabbat in order for it to be mutar. The Murray Mishnah says there that by Beit HaMoked, ain't okay. Beit HaMoked, as soon as they lit it, they were fine, because Kohanim Zrizim him. And therefore they would not stoke the fire on Shabbat. So we know that the Beit HaMoked had a fire in it. The Beit HaMoked was probably a circular type of room, of which part of it was in the Chol and part of it was in the Kodesh. And the fire that was kept there was for two reasons. One was to add fire to the Mizbeach. The mitzvah is to place fire on the Mizbeach, even though there's Esha Yored Min HaShemayim, nevertheless there is a mitzvah to bring it from the Hedyot. And number two is, the Kohanim used to have to walk around barefoot in the Migdash, and so Rashi brings that they used to warm themselves, Kenegra Or, by that fire, they used to warm themselves at night. Imagine you're walking around on stone, cold marble floors in the wintertime, it was freezing cold. So they used to warm their feet, Kenegra the fire in the Beit HaMoked. In addition to that, we'll see in the Mishnah that they also used to sleep there. They used to stay there overnight. The Beit Av, who was going to work the next day in the Mikdash, used to stay overnight in the Beit HaMoked and then get up early in the morning to start the Avoda in the Mikdash. Beit Avtinus or Beit HaNitzotz, both the Beit Avtinus and Beit HaNitzotz are you aliyot, were upper chambers. They were not on the ground floor, but rather upper chambers. And in both of those locations, there was a Levi that did Shmirah below, and a Kohen that was doing the Shmirah on the upper level. Harubim Shomrim Sham. The youngsters used to be Shomer there. Rubim, it comes from the word Peru, or Avu, but also the Aramaic term Rabia. Rabia means to grow or to be a young one, like Kruvaya from the Kruvim. There's our youngsters, young Kohanim, who had yet to reach the age where they could perform Avodah. So therefore, they would be the ones that did the Shmirah, both from the perspective of that was what they could do. They weren't allowed to do Avodah yet, so they did the Shmirah. As well as the perspective of those that could do Avodah wouldn't do Shmirah. They would dedicate themselves to Avodah, as well as we wouldn't let them. We need them for the Avodah, so we wouldn't let them do Shmirah. There's always the youngsters that do the Shmirah. Rosh over here gives the reason for the fact that the Rubim, the youngsters, were the ones who guarded, is because Haim Zvizim Lalot Baliot Tovikach Shomrim Haim. They were Zvizim to go up. They were the ones who would go up quickly, get upstairs, and therefore they're the ones that were chosen to be the guardians of these locations. Beit HaMoked Kippah. The Beit HaMoked was a Kippah. Now, in terms of what the Kippah is today, and the Mefarshim explained that a Kippah means a rounded top. It was unlike the other two places which we said they were upper levels. Here it was a kippah. I mean, this was on the ground floor, and it had a kippah over the top. The other way the Mefaresh explains it over here is the kippah was actually holding it up. There was some sort of archways or arch structure upon which the Beit HaMoked sat. And that's what it means that it was a kippah over here. Kippah was what supported the Beit HaMoked. You can see that in the bottom of the Mefaresh, he says, Klamar lishkat Beit HaMoked agav lishka shel avanim haita. Was above a some sort of chamber made out of stone. They built it on top of a structure. So, according to the Mefaresh, this is consistent with the other two placements that the Kohanim had to do their Shmirah from higher points. They were like the Shomrei Ha'ir, who are up high, who look over the whole city, who look out. So therefore, the two other places were Aliyot. And the Mefaresh claims that the Kippah here was something that elevated the chamber. Some sort of arch structure that elevated the chamber so that they were up high again to do the Shemirah up above. The other possibility, again, was the kippah, some sort of cover, the top of the Beit HaMoked, and you'll see that in pictures or diagrams of the Mikdash in many places, that the Beit HaMoked has a rounded top to it. Bayit gadol haya mukaf rovdim shel even. So this Beit HaMoked was a large chamber that was mukaf rovdim shel even, rows of stones. The way it was built was that the outer walls were made out of stone, and as it ascended, the stones got narrower and narrower as it ascended. So what it did was create shelves along the wall, because you'd have a row of stone, and then as it went on to the next row was narrower than the row before it. And the space that was left behind were left shelves around the outer edge of the Beit HaMoked. And that is the place where the Ziknei Beit Av Yishinim Sham. That's where they used to sleep overnight. Those were the equivalent of their bunks in the Mikdash. So they used to sleep up there on those
recesses.
Maftechot Azara B'Yadam. And they had the keys of the Azara in their hands that nobody could get to without their permission. Pirchei Kuna, the youngsters, they used to be ish kisato ba'aretz, that each one had their place on the ground. And whether the word kisato comes from keset being a pillow or some sort of sleeping bag that they had on the floor, or you could say over here, ish kisuto, they did it with their clothing ba'aretz. We'll see in a second that they used to fold up their big day kuna, which they were not allowed to sleep in, and put it under their heads. Lo ayu yishenim be bigdei kodesh. They did not sleep in their bigdei kuna. Elah poshtim u'menichim otan tachat roshehem. They used to strip themselves of their bigdei kuna and put them under their heads. U'mitkasim b'ksut atzmam. They wear their own pajamas because they can't sleep in the bigdei kuna. It was an improper usage of bigdei kuna. Bigdei kuna used for avodah and only for the purpose of avodah. Again, the Gemara in other places asks about the issue of kilayim, because we know that the avnate of the big day kuna had kilayim in it, and therefore over here, if they were making it into a pillow, they were sleeping on the kilayim. That's a question of why there was no din or problem of lying with regards to the big day kuna being under their heads. When they're bavoda, we know that it's asei dochelot asei. So over there, there's no problem of them wearing it. But here, they were not bishat avoda. And therefore, the question of whether lo b'shat avodah is there a problem of kilayim at all with the big day kuna, is it hutra or duchuya? But over here, especially where they weren't wearing it, then once they're not wearing it like big day kuna, so is there a problem of kilayim? Ira keri le'achad mehem. Overnight, if one of them had an esimen omission, yotzev olechlo b'misiba. He used to leave through the Beit HaMoked, through the misiba. The misiba, he's seen in the Mefaresh, Ra'iti b'bitrono shel Rabbi Yochanan bar Shimon Zatzal, Chol midot mochiach shamisiba hu amud shel binyan, pillar of a building, she'olim b'yordim bo ayidei gilgul, that you go up and down it through a curvature, a spinning way, I would assume a spiral staircase, some sort of way that allowed them to descend from the Beit HaMoked into what we call the Mechilot, the tunnels that were below the Mikdash. If you remember, the original Mikdash built by Shlomo HaMelech was built on the bedrock of Har HaMoriah, area of the Temple Mount. That was true in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah too, when they came back and they built the Mikdash, they also built it on the bedrock. Later on, Herod, when he decided that he wanted to curry favor with the Jews, he did a lot of building. One of the things that he did was he renovated the Beit HaMikdash. And renovating the Beit HaMikdash, he expanded the size of Har HaBayit significantly. And how did he do that? A mountain is not straight, it's not flat. If you look at Har HaBayit today, it's flat. The reason is that he built retaining walls around the mountainside, The retaining walls are what you know as the Kotel HaMaravi. Kotel HaMaravi is actually one of the retaining walls of the mountain. There's a wall on the western side, on the southern side, as well as on the eastern side. They slowly but surely are graded until they become to the northern side, which is the highest point of the Har HaBayit, also the weakest point of entry into Yerushalayim. It's the side where you can attack from because it's level with the Mikdash. If you ever walk through Shar HaYot, you're actually level with the Har HaBayit at that point in time. If you look to your left side as you're walking through Shar HaYot, you're looking right mamash into Har HaBayit, level with Har HaBayit. So the northern end is the mountain, the bedrock itself. If you ever go through the tunnels by the Mikdash, you'll see the bedrock rising until you reach the point where the bedrock is level with Har HaBayit, and that's an area around where you can see the work of the Chashmonaim and palaces, the Amon of the Chashmonaim, because that was built on the bedrock. It was there on the northern side. On the southern side, and again, the Kotel Maravi, the Kotel Mizrahi, they all exist. All those walls are still there today. They built retaining walls to the mountain, and they brought filler material. And he filled in the entire mount to create a flat platform, and that's why Har HaBayit today is flat. Because of that, underneath that area was easy to dig into and to build there. And therefore, there were entrances. If you go to the southern side, there's Shar HaChuda. Shar HaChuda is actually below the level of the platform of Har HaBayit. And he used to enter from there, and there was a staircase that brought you up level to Har HaBayit, because they were able to go from underneath and up, because below, they could build structures that held it up. The Al-Aqsa Mosque is all below ground there. It's all below the level of Har HaBayit. And then they're now trying, have been for a number of years, expanding it, doing construction there. They're digging out from underneath by Har HaBayit, the area that was Har HaBayit. Because of that, there were also mechilot, there were tunnels that they had built under the Beit HaMikdash. One of the reasons for these tunnels was the ability of the Kohanim to exit the Mikdash without having to go back into the Kodesh. Here's an individual with Zira Keri. He's Tamei Tumat Erev. So he can't go back into the Mikdash. So what he did was, he was Yoreid Misibah, he went down from the Beit HaMoked, down through this staircase, this spiral staircase, into a tunnel, and he went to a place, Tachar HaBira, below the Bira, Machloket, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, in the Gemara and Yoma, as well in other places, whether Bira means the Mikdash as a whole, or Bira is a specific location in the Mikdash. Either way, this tunnel went under the Bira. Venerot Tokim Mikan HaMikan, they had candles on both sides of the tunnel in order to illuminate the area. There was a mikveh underground there for the Kohanim to go into the mikveh. In addition to the fire or the pyre that was in the Beit HaMoked, there was also a pyre down below by the Beit HaTfilah. There was also a toilet down there, a bathroom. Why was it called the Kavod? Beit HaKiseh, we know, we understand that was a toilet, but why was it a Makom of Kavod? Zeyak Fodo. This was the system that was in place that gave it kavod. Matzo na'o, he found it closed or locked, yodeh she'en sham adam, then he knows there's someone there and he'd back away. Patuach, he finds it open, yodeh she'en sham adam, that he was able to go there. Why it was important that there be a beit kisei etzel beit tefillah? One simple explanation is that the Kohanim also had to go to the bathroom. In order to go to the bathroom, they couldn't go b'kodesh. This was a way to have something b'chol that was outside of the Mikdash or the realms of the Mikdash and go to the bathroom. That's because we know from other places, michilot lo nitkadshu. The tunnels were not nitkadesh. There's a machloket, whether that's only tunnels that opened up into chol on both sides, or even tunnels that opened up on one side of the chol. But the assumption here being that these areas were not kodesh down below, and therefore someone had to go for the mikveh, or his tamei, or someone who had to go to the bathroom would descend there. In addition to that, there are others who want to explain that as a din and tumah, that someone has an emission. In order to cleanse themselves before they go to the mikveh, they have to urinate first in order to make sure that all the tuma has exited. So therefore they had the beit kisei there in order to allow for this process before the person went into the mikveh. Yarad betaval, you go down, and if they didn't do that, and then after they went to the mikveh, they urinated and out came out more of the emission, there was something left there at the tip, then it would be mitameim again. Urine pushes out whatever was left of the emission. Yarad betaval, he goes down, he's tovel, alav v'nistabeg, comes back up, dried himself off, v'nit chameim k'neged ha'midura, and he warmed himself by the fire there in order to dry off. Ba, v'yashav lo etzel echav ha'kohanim, he go back to the Beit HaMoked by his echav ha'kohanim, his brothers the Kohanim. Ad shiyu ha'shiarim niftachim, until the gates opened, the otze v'olechlo, and then he would leave. Now, why was he allowed to return, even though he has tumat keri? So there are two possibilities. One possibility is that the Beit HaMokeh, like I said before, was half in Kodesh, half in the Chol. And so he went to the Chol side of the Beit HaMokeh. The other possibility is that we learned this in the Gemara, that the Isur of Baal Keri to be on Har HaBayit is actually only an Isur Dirabanan. It's not an Isur Doraita, only an Isur Dirabanan. That was a locha that was Nitchadesh. And therefore the Rabbanan were Gozer, were not Gozer in this instance. They waived that Gzerah. For the Kohen have the ability to leave. So therefore they left in the Beit HaMokeh because they didn't want to leave in the middle of the night, throw him out of the Mikdash, so he could wait till the morning and stay in the Beit HaMokeh. So because of that, it's only a Din Derabanan, they're able to be more flexible in terms of letting the Kohen stay there. And then in the morning he left. The Ri says that the reason that they didn't throw him out right away was, not coming into Machane Leviyah. They only did it in regular thoroughfares. Shaloi karvu shama. Aval kol shar machane leviyah lo gazru. He says that they only made the gzera of Balkari on Har HaBayit or by the machane leviyah in places of entrance and egress, but not in places where they were just machane leviyah stam. And therefore the Kohen was able to be here because he wasn't in one of those normal thoroughfares on Har HaBayit and he wasn't underneath that restriction. Mishu rotze litrom et hamizbeach. One, now we begin the process, the morning avoda. Anybody who wanted to be toreim the mizbeach chumata deshen, which was an avoda that is required every day in the mikdash, mashkim b'tovel, you get up early and go to the mikveh. Achi v'lo yavo ha-mimuneh. Until the gabbai came. Before the gabbai came, they'd go down to the mikveh to be mitayarim themselves, and then the gabbai would come in order to throw the lot for the ability to do the chumata deshen. V'chi be'ezu sha'a ba-mimuneh. So what time did the mimuneh show up? Lo kol yitim shavot. He didn't have an alarm clock, so he didn't come at the same time every day. Pe'amim shuba mikrot hagever. There were times that he came from the krot hagever, the call of the man. Osamuch lo milefanav o miacharav, a little before, a little afterwards. So now what's krot hagever? A krot hagever could just be the call of the rooster. It's the morning call, it's the break of dawn. The other possibility is krot hagever by the Gemara in Yoma talks about. Right, he used to go up to check whether it was time to start the avodah of the morning. Right, so they used to go up, climb up high, and the krota giver was the individuals who went up to announce the fact that the dawn had broken, that here am Mizrach, and then they asked back to him, Ache v'chevron, until it reached the point of chevron, askir et avot, and he used to call it krota giver. That was the beginning of the avodah, or we call him the clapper, the one who woke them up in the morning and began the process of avodah in the Mikdash. Muneh ba, Muneh comes with dafak alehem. He knocks on the door in order to let him in. Vein pitchulo, and they opened it up for him. And then me shetaval yavo vayapis. Anybody who went to the mikveh already can come and be a part of the lottery to decide who gets to do the chumat adeshen. Ipisu, they do. They throw the lots. And misha zacha zachabo. Whoever zacha in the lots was zoche in doing the chumat adeshen. And the Mefarish mentions over here that they used to do that. The Beit HaMokeh on the Banui b'kodesh. Beit HaMokeh had to be built in the kodesh. They mapilim pious el bazarab in makom kodesh. They could only do the pious, the lottery, in a place that was kodesh. So therefore, it had to be on either the whole, before we said the Beit HaMokeh possibly was all kodesh, or on the half of the side of it that was kodesh, that's where they did the pious. Because the shara paisot were in the lishkat hagazit, not over here in the Beit HaMokeh. Nevertheless, when they started out the day, the Kohanim who were there and had gone to the mikveh were found in that location of the Beit HaMokeh, and therefore they threw the first pious over there. But he says, Bazara yefshar the fayes. It's not proper to do the lottery itself in the Azara itself. Because the way they used to do the pious, if you remember from the Mishnah and Yoma, they used to take a hat off in order to do the lots. So therefore it wasn't proper to be there without your mitznefet in the Azara. It's not kavod. Therefore they didn't do it directly in the Azara. They did it in areas that were adjacent to the Azara, like the Beit HaMokeh or the Lishkat HaGazit that were Kodesh, but adjacent to the Azara. The other possibility is that the lottery was done. All the Kohanim who were casting in the lots would be in a circle around, as it says in the Mishnah Yoma, and therefore whoever was on the side that had their back to the Kodesh HaKodeshim, that was not respectful. So therefore they didn't do the lots in the Azara directly, they did it in adjacent rooms, whether here at the Beit HaMokeh or later on in the Lishkat HaGazit. Yeah, we'll stop over here. We'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow.